all my life. Been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle paid the price. Want a slice, got to roll the dice. That's why all my life I've been grinding all my life. Look, all my life.
Welcome back to Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. Guess who's back, baby?
Hold on, are you sure this ain't the ship with Darren Smith? Hold on, did you say Darren and Sterling? You've been gone so long, we renamed the show.
Oh, hell. It was a week, okay? I was gone for a week.
Felt like forever, Sterling.
A week.
Don't you ever leave me like that
I'm again. Back.
Welcome back.
Just like Eminem, I'm back.
Okay. I didn't know he was gone.
Well, you know the whole guess who's back again. It's Shady.
That's yeah.
Okay. Sterling's back.
He is, man. How was your trip, man?
It was great. 150 people, family reunion. I do basketball in the league, and it's so much more physical when you're going up against family. And I have 6'5" cousins who played D end at Virginia. I have a 6'10" cousin. And
so basically you were playing against grown men.
Dude, I got just rocked on one.
Yeah. Try to tell you, so you're not ready for that type
of
life.
We got second. Hey, come on now. I was draining three. No, it was fun though. We had a great time. A lot of food, a lot of yard work. We do an obstacle course where you get, you know, like the tires that football players use and you go put your feet between. Then you have to do a jump rope where you have to go forward with the jump rope. You're racing someone with it. Then you got a kid in a wheelbarrow. Yes, a kid in a wheelbarrow. And you race with that kid in the wheelbarrow against someone else. And there's a slip and slide. We get into it. We're very competitive.
I'm curious. What did your girlfriend make of it? Because I think this is the first one, obviously.
She goes, it's kind of what you explained it as. So I think I did a pretty good job. Like, it's in the middle of
and
nowhere.
And were they receptive of her?
Yes, they loved her. Okay. She was very good at volleyball. So she held her own volleyball and ping pong.
Beach volleyball or regular volleyball?
Just regular volleyball. And we play a lot of pickleball, which I know the station's all about now.
Yeah.
So.
Not a sport we've ventured into.
It's fun, man. Dude, it's fun. It's really cool.
I will say, you were missed. I did miss you a little bit. I ragged on you every day while you were gone.
Oh, I'd expect nothing less.
And, look, I got to say, first and foremost, because I did give you credit, you did pick the Milwaukee Bucks to win the NBA title. Of course, you were never strong in your conviction, but
no.
Nonetheless, you did pick him, so that counts for something.
My $3 on Giannis to win the MVP after game one, though, was pretty strong.
Oh, I always figured you were going to win that. What was the
payout? $3.90. That was all it was.
Oh, 90 cents. Well, you know.
Yeah, there was not very good odds, even when they were down.
That's good, man. Look, we got to – jam-packed show today. We'll be joined by ESPN's Adam Teicher in the second segment. We'll get his thoughts on Chiefs training camp, what he's seen thus far with the rookies and Patrick. I was up there today. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. But, Sterling, what do you want to start off with first?
So, first, the Big 12. I want to start with the Big 12 right here. Texas, Oklahoma, telling Big 12 they're not going to renew their media rights.
They said it with their chest out as well.
They were very strong in their convictions. Unlike ours, unlike mine with picking Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah.
The Big 12, not a good look. I know K-State's trying to come out and say, hey, we can't rag on the Big 12. We got to kind of band together. We got to do something. Don't jump ship now. Well,
but nobody's listening to K-State. That's the hope.
If KU said it, you might get some more just because of basketball reasons. But KU's also in a precarious situation, too, because their football really brings them down. I know KU fans don't want to hear it because they are a blue blood in basketball. I understand that. Their football program really does bring them down, and in the grand scheme of things, football is the breadwinner when it comes to generating revenue.
And it's funny because that normally doesn't happen at most schools. It's the football that generates the majority of money. Obviously, the NCAA tournament and D1 football generates money for all the sports in D1, 2, and 3. I think maybe Duke. Now, Clemson is the moneymaker there. I think Duke basketball, to an extent, North Carolina basketball. But
Kentucky, but even Kentucky has a pretty solid football program now. Kentucky has really righted the ship, and Kentucky is a very above-average program. Kansas is in a precarious situation, whether they want to admit it or not, because they're not going to go to the SEC.
They're I mean, there's talk that if they were to do anything, they would look. They've maybe have already put out feelers to the Big Ten.
Yeah.
And but see, I don't know. Well, not for basketball, I think. But I think the issue would be if you're KU, are you looking to try to just do that one sport, kind of like in you know, and try to take your sport somewhere else? Because no one can be Notre Dame, but Notre Dame. You know, where they're independent in football, but the rest of the sports are ACC in athletic sports. Of course, if they were to join a conference contractually, they'd have to go over to the ACC for football as well. If Kansas makes that overture, I mean, it would be, no, I'm not going to lie, it would be good for the football program if they were in the Big Ten because of the teams that would come to Lawrence. Granted, they come, get an L, go back home, but the revenue and the
travel. I mean, like Rutgers right now. That's kind of what they do.
Yeah, but you get a whole lot of money for it. But the basketball team, I think KU basketball, one, they would have to, especially if OU and Texas move out, they're going to have to because even if you bring in, when people said BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, It doesn't do anything for recruiting to be, and to be honest, it might bring not only the competition but the recruit level down for KU, and that's something that if you're a Jayhawk fan, you don't want. I mean, because obviously you want to be in the strongest and one of the best conferences in basketball. Big 12 has been that conference over the last number of years, especially under Bill. So even though they've won 14 out of the last 15. You know, regular season titles, you know, the Big 12 has always had a number of teams in the top 25, especially when it comes time for tournament.
Yeah.
You know, if OU and Texas leave, then what's in it really for KU to stick around? I mean, they could, and people talking about these super conference and super conferences, and I would still try to wrap my mind around it because they talked about KU and the Pac-12 or the Big Ten or even the ACC, and I'm like, I just can't see it. Now, travel purpose, I mean, I cover KU here locally and when the tournament starts, but you know, I'm not really excited about them just traveling East Coast or West Coast all the time.
Yeah, what are you gonna do? Put them in the Big East, where if you want to actually,
there's no Big East no more, isn't there?
Again,
yeah, that's my point.
It's such a touchy subject when it's going to come down to it. Right now, the contract's through 2025, OU in Texas, but they can pay a $75 to $80 million fee and break that and get out early. They have to give 18 months notice, and then they can bail.
Yeah, well,
and according to Big 12 sources, so take it as what you will, when it's unnamed, when you get Big 12 sources, they say that's still a possibility, is them saying, you know what? We're going to break it. We're going to be out in 18 months. We'll pay the fine.
Well, they could be out much sooner. I mean, because I think the idea is for the SEC to extend invitations to them, and it would just be a matter of, you know, their lawyers or whatever drawing up some sort of agreement. And I don't know. Look, I mean, they've got big money donors. Now, we're talking about Texas got oil money.
Yes.
Oklahoma. I mean, so it's not like they don't have the money to just get
jump
themselves out.
That's jump change.
Yeah, to go into those conferences. And,
they're not paying the players. That's jump change.
Yeah, and I don't think they can do it this year. I don't think they can do it this football season because I'm pretty sure the schedule's already in place and stuff like that. But yeah, I don't see no reason why they wouldn't be out by next year and be in the SEC next year.
So the next step for OU in Texas is to officially let the SEC know they would like to join. The SEC then would need 11 of the 14 presidents and chancellors to extend an invitation to those two schools. I don't know why anyone would say no if you're in the SEC.
Well, Texas A&M would say no.
A&M may say no.
They're hoping like Missouri and I think Arkansas was, but I can't
see him saying no. Like, because the money, if you're Mizzou, why did you leave the Big 12, right? One reason was because you thought it was going to eventually have this happen, but two, it was money. Texas and OU will bring money in.
Well, the other thing is that, I mean, Texas, they got their own network, but the pot actually gets smaller. But I think they're feeling like with the addition of Texas and OU, they can go back to ESPN or whoever the conference rights TV media rights is, and go back to the negotiating table, get more money, and get more money for all the schools. I mean, now that the players, man, gosh, this is, you know, shout out to the Supreme Court with this NIL, because the fact that now the players can get paid, and, you know, we talked about it, I think, before you left, Sterling, you know, with Nick Saban, and no, actually, we wasn't with you. Nick Saban talked about his quarterback, who he hasn't even named a starter, is getting upwards to close to seven figures as relates to name, image, and likeness. So, I mean, there's just a lot of money out here that these teams, these colleges, these presidents are taking advantage of. Now, the question is going to be what happens to the Big 12.
Yeah. I mean, as a Mizzou fan, I know I'm biased, but I want to say this. When Mizzou and A&M left, it's not going to be like OU and Texas leaving. I'm not going to be disillusioned and say when Missouri left,
no,
that
Colorado
was –
Colorado, too.
Was,
I mean, even though Colorado left OU.
Colorado and Nebraska. I mean,
yeah.
those weren't as big of losses as OU and Texas will be.
Oh,
Big
yeah.
12 could weather the storm of Missouri and Colorado and A&M leaving. They can't weather the storm of Texas and OU leaving. You're not going to tell me Baylor and KU, and occasionally you can maybe say K-State's going to be able to carry this conference. Yeah. When you don't have enough top-end talent in both football and basketball to be relevant, in my opinion, I don't know what they do, but I would assume we're probably going to see the Big 12 dissolve.
Yeah, but the other question I guess I would follow with you on that is that if they dissolve, we can kind of get an idea where KU would go. That would be the Big Ten. Maybe Iowa State, but where do the other teams go? Because, you know, because look, I'm still trying to think geographically.
Then you're going to have to bring Wichita State. Are they going to be in the Big 12 now? I mean, you're going to have
– Well, the one thing that would hurt Kansas City is we would lose
–
well – another thing we'd lose out on a basketball tournament. So.
Just to me, you can't have a Big 8 again. I don't think the Big 8 is going to work in today's college landscape, in my opinion.
Not as a power conference.
But if you want to still have the Power 5 conference designation, you can't have 8 people, right? Like, that can't happen. That's my main thing is, okay, maybe the Big 12 sticks around, but you're not going to be a Power 5 conference anymore. At that point, what's the point?
Yeah, but what has to happen is, again, now you're – because that would pretty much be the SEC. You'd have a super conference because they'd have 16 teams. And so you would look – you know, you look and try to put some of these other big, quote-unquote, D1 schools in these other conferences. But, again, for Kansas City and how it affects us, I'm looking at the Big 12 tournament. You know, I mean, the basketball stuff where – it's funny. We call it the Big 12. It's only 10 teams. That still just baffles my mind. But of course, that's because of those two teams leaving. But
because they're gonna have to start poaching if the Big 12.
But again, yeah. But
who are they gonna get? And you're
not.
You
talk about Houston. You talk about Cincinnati. Sure. Again, geographically, it
works. Cincinnati works. Well, 8 hours.
Yeah,
well,
technically, I guess Houston works because it's still a Texas school. But then they said BYU. I just
BYU would be a little far.
And nobody's traveling to BYU.
Just to me, I don't know how they're going to keep the Power 5 conference label. Because even if you do get Houston, they're not –
Well, you're able to keep it because, one, the money that OU and Texas would have to pay, you know, the media rights, the Big 12 or however you call it, I mean, that money's got to go somewhere. I mean, I know it gets redistributed to the teams and stuff because that's why they have to pay almost $150 million together to do that.
It's going to be very difficult to figure out how this is going to shake out. I think we'll probably find out in the coming days because everyone's best guess right now is OU and Texas going to the SEC. We'll find out, I would assume, in the coming weeks how soon that move is going to be. And once you know it's over, that's when we'll start seeing other schools in the Big 12, what is basically now the Big 8, try and figure out what is going on. I don't think Mizzou or A&M are going to be going back anytime soon. It's just this, in my lifetime probably, this is going to be the biggest realignment in college sports, in my lifetime.
Yeah, no, I'm with – no, well, I agree. And the biggest thing, like, if it is – whew – I mean, as a college football, as someone who likes college football, I know you and I both, we love it. Of course, you went to MU, so you watched it. I went to Lincoln University, but I covered KU. We love it. I mean, and it's as a fan of college football, it works out for us because now we get to see different matchups that we didn't have a chance to see before. And even in basketball, I mean, look, the idea of KU going up against Illinois now, or Michigan State. Granted, they do play Michigan State in every 2 years, I think, in the Champions Classic. But to be able to do a home-and-home with some of those teams that we see, because remember last year, Illinois was the number one team, I think, going into the tournament, one of the top teams.
College basketball, so those football, not so much.
Yeah, football, not so much. But just thinking of some of the different matchups that you could have, seeing Bill Self match up against Tom Izzo twice a season now, and, Michigan and some of those type of things.
Yeah. For basketball purposes, KU will be fantastic.
It would be great.
But we'll take a quick break, come back, talk more. This is Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back to Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. Darren was doing the little Thriller dance. This was coming on. I liked it.
Look, man, all we did was take a break, a 3-minute break. Next thing I know, I'm looking at breaking news, PACs, concessions, could reel in Rogers, and also lawyer, 10 police complaints filed versus Ross. We were talking about this before we came on, yeah. So it's just
we got updates. Oh, it's a good time to take a break, is what you're saying.
Well, yeah. If I knew that, we take breaks more often to get more breaking news. But we can talk about that with...
Let's start with Aaron Rodgers first.
Yeah.
We'll have him on in about 7 minutes.
Yeah, well, I was thinking more so Olympics, so we got to make sure we save some talk for that at the end of the show.
Deal. But we'll do that. But apparently the Packers are close to convincing Aaron Rodgers to return to Green Bay for one more year.
But I'm trying to figure out what concessions, because if you're not firing a GM or whatever, I mean, and I'm looking at this report on ESPN.com, but just to read a little bit of it, it talks about they were able to reach a mutually agreed upon terms that are close to convince them to return for training camp. Said the agreement in principle would include an approximation of the following conditions that the two sides now finalizing to alleviate and address some of Rodgers' concerns. Next year, the 2023 year in Rodgers' contract, the last one in his current deal, would be voided with no tags allowed in the future. The Packers would agree to review Rodgers' situation at the end of the season. Rodgers' contract would be adjusted with no loss of income to give the Packers more cap room now, and mechanisms would be put in place to address Rodgers' issues. Again, I don't see what's really anything different besides...
mechanism? These are just buzzwords they're throwing to... Apparently, there has to be something that we don't know, because Aaron Rodgers is not going to go and fall for buzzwords. They were going to make him the highest paid quarterback in the NFL, and he's like, yeah, I'm out. I still don't want to be here. Devontae Adams apparently does not want to be there. I don't know what's going on with the Green Bay Packers, because everyone likes to think they're a well-run front office. And I know people like to bag on Rodgers. We both do. We know
he doesn't seem like a people person.
But when Devontae Adams also says he kind of has an issue with the front office, maybe it's start timing to say, hey, the Packers might have an issue here, and it's not just a one-off.
And to be honest, I think Devontae Adams, I think it's more so he's going to want to go wherever Aaron Rodgers goes next year. Because from the looks of it, their review situation implies that the team is going to trade Rodgers if he feels that way after this upcoming. But again, the GM and the president, Mark Murphy and Brian Gutekunst, they're still there, so I'm not exactly sure, what's going to change. I mean, you can have a handshake agreement, but I mean, if you're the Packers, you're not really losing anything. I mean, granted, you end up paying him the money that he was going to make if he played anyway.
Sure.
And you can still trade him like you probably plan on doing after this year anyway. So I think the Packers, if this scenario plays itself out, I think the Packers are the winners in this, because Aaron Rodgers, not from what it looks of, it's not like he's getting a new contract or any additional money or anything. So I just don't know.
I don't get it. And especially if Jordan Love, if you think he's still 1 year away, I don't know if he's going to be a big piece in all of this. If the Jordan Love situation is still the thorn in Rodgers' side, I don't know what the Packers' thoughts are with him, but that could also be something that's not getting talked about that might be an under-the-table type of agreement, because if the front office, they were talking about how Jordan Love's the next guy. Remember that when he was drafted? Oh, he's going to be our future quarterback.
Yeah, and the one thing I didn't realize is how long Rodgers. It says he's in the 17th season with the.
He's old.
I didn't. Me, and it's funny. I know he's 37, you know, and I do the math, and I'm thinking, well, he played, didn't he play all 4 years, or three, 4 years in college? So I'm like, was he was drafted at 20? So
And he didn't start right away.
Yeah, so I'm just like, man, he's, you know, he's been in the league for a long time. I really did not realize the number, and it's, you know, I mean, obviously I was watching when he won the Super Bowl and was watching, been watching him all these years. It's just still kind of hard to fathom how long he's been in the NFL.
Because he was supposed to be the Tom Brady heir, and he is 37. He's old. It's funny seeing the Tom Brady heir be close to almost retirement age.
And the same age, damn near the same age as Tom Brady, and Tom Brady's still playing at the highest level.
Yeah.
I want to get your thoughts quickly on the Bucks rings that they got last week.
Those are sweet, man. Those are sweet.
You got mad at me. I'm like, hey, man. I'm like, I like the Chiefs ring too, but it ain't got nothing on that because, one, you can't get it, and two, it was, you know, it was done the same way that the Golden State Warriors and the Lakers championship rings were, where it twists off. Dude, that's just awesome.
No, they're cool. I'm not a huge jewelry or ring guy in general, but those are cool. If you're a player, you probably will never wear it except for twice or three times in your life.
And please, that's a man.
What are you going to wear? You're not going to wear it for everyday occasion. You're not wearing that every single day.
It's an everyday occasion. But
you're not going to the grocery store and rocking that.
I mean, it depends on who's at the grocery store now. You know, you bust in like, for real? they going to look at the side of that ring and be like, can I shop for your groceries?
No, that's something you keep locked away.
It depends on where you at. Because if you in L.A., you rocking that thing on Hollywood and Rodeo Drive, and you're going to have – all these scantily clad, you know, models just running after you.
And Darren, you don't want that.
I may not want it, but I'm saying they might.
Okay. I'm just saying, Darren, I don't want to. I'm not trying to get robbed or someone try to.
All you got to do is have the Frank Clark protection, brother. All you got to do.
Yeah, that's the last thing I need. That's the last thing anyone needs is Frank Clark as your bodyguard.
Quickly, though, before we get out of here on this break so we can bring in Adam Teicher in the next segment, looks as though two women are filing new allegations, which is a total of 10 now, police complaints against Houston Texans quarterback Deshaun Watson. This is according to his lawyer. But what's interesting is that, you know, even with the previous eight that have been filed, he's still yet to face any criminal charges.
Yeah, I'm waiting to see how this plays out. I'm just waiting to see how it plays out because, to be honest with you, I don't think anyone truly knows as far as people not involved. We don't know the whole situation. I'm not going to try and jump to conclusions and one side or the other because we've seen how things have played out here in town, especially with the Tyreek Hill situation. It's not worth it until everything comes out, all the facts are out, then you can make the judgment from there. The only thing I will say, it's still not a great look, not a great look for Deshaun Watson at all. And that take what you will, but this is very bad for Deshaun Watson. Now the Texans are saying we're willing to trade him. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing when it comes to how the case is going to get played out, because maybe they might know something that we don't.
Yeah, and look, he did show up to training camp on yesterday. He did reiterate he wants a trade from the Houston Texans. They are now willing to trade Deshaun Watson to finally get this out of their way or out of their hair. Of course, they want 5 high draft picks and a couple of starting players. I'm not sure if they're going to get that, because had they wanted this back in January when he asked for a trade initially, they might be okay. But with all the lawsuits and stuff that seems to come out, you know, drip, 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 if I'm the Philadelphia Eagles, Denver Broncos, Miami Dolphins, you know, your asking price has to come down. Just has to.
Yeah. If you're the Texans, you should have traded him a while before if you are going to. Now you're in a, again, like Kansas, I said precarious once today. I'll say it again, precarious situation. This is Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City. We'll come back as we'll be joined by Adam Teicher of ESPN.
Welcome back to Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 94.5 FM, 1510 AM. We are joined by the one who helps make ESPN run. You don't hear his name too much, but you will hear his name often on our show. He is the ESPN reporter for the Kansas City Chiefs, Mr. Adam Teicher. Adam, good afternoon, my friend.
Hey, Darren, how you doing today?
Doing okay. Well, first of all, I got to say it was good to see you. I think it's been a minute since we've seen each other in person. So the fact that finally got a chance to touch bases with you and actually touch you, like, hey, Adam, how you doing? Making sure you're still real. Felt good today.
Why are you touching him, Darren?
Well, yeah, you gotta,
absolutely.
Got to make sure.
It's a beautiful new world we're living in, right?
Yes, sir. Look, I know. I want to get right into it because I know we got a Zoom call in about a half hour. Your initial thoughts of what you've seen thus far out of Patrick Mahomes and the rookies, what we've seen, you know, first 2-3 days?
Yeah, not much to see, as you could tell today. They do a couple brief 7-on-7 periods because they only had today, I think it was 24 players out there. So not a whole lot to see. I guess if I had one takeaway from these 3 days is that, you know, Pat Mahomes looks like he's moving around just fine. If there's a problem with his foot, I certainly can't tell. Juan Thornhill and DeAndre Baker, I mean, those are two pretty big pieces at the back end of their defense. I think they're going to need both those guys before the season's over. So if those guys are ready for a full season, particularly Thornhill, I think that's good news for the Chiefs. So, I guess if those are my takeaways, it's that Mahomes, Thornhill, and even DeAndre Baker are maybe ready to help out the Chiefs this year.
Yeah, it was interesting listening to Juan because I remember being at the barbershop last year, you know, while he was playing during the season. I asked him, I said, bro, how are you feeling? And he said he's 100%, and then come to find out, I don't know if he's just lying just to be lying, but, you know, for him to say that, you know, he wasn't 100% last year, but I'm like, okay, so you wasn't really 100% last year, but you didn't really. Now, I think Spags kind of realized, and they may have, you know, cut his or limited his playing time or whatever, but it was like you didn't want to, you know, try to get healed all the way up before coming back and, you know, pushing yourself. But the fact that, like you said, he says he's 100% healthy now, hopefully we'll get a chance to see him, you know, at his greatest strength later on this year.
Yeah, and, you know, he was a big factor for the Chiefs. You remember his rookie year. They were kind of struggling defensively towards the middle of the season, and then kind of turned it on at the end. He was a big factor for them before he got hurt. So, I do think he can be a difference maker for the Chiefs back there.
Adam, Sterling Holmes here. With DeAndre Baker, where do you see him playing out? Is he going to be a top-end, lockdown guy? Is he going to be a depth piece? Is he just there, you know, hoping they find something out of him? Where do you think DeAndre Baker shakes out?
Well, I don't see him being a Pro Bowler, if that's what you mean, but do I see him being part of the solution? Yeah, I think he will. I think, you know, assuming he's healthy, you know, he said he's close to 100%. We'll see. I mean, I have no doubt that he probably feels he is, but let's see, you know, how close he is to being what he needs to be, and we'll know a lot more when the pads come on. But I think he's part of the solution for the Chiefs. You know, they have Legarius Sneed, and they have Charvarius Ward, and they have Rashad Fenton. Well, I think Baker's an important piece for the Chiefs. You know, they have Keys as well. You know, they have some bodies, but there's room there for playing time from somebody to earn it. So I think he's a big part of what the Chiefs are going to be doing a corner this year. At least they're counting on him, and assuming he's healthy. And I think he's one of the reasons maybe the Chiefs weren't more aggressive about going to get a corner this year, including Bashaud Breeland. So, yeah, I think he's going to be part of the playing rotation when he's healthy. It's just a question of when that'll be, when he's back to the player he was. But, very small sample size. But he played well enough against the Chargers last year. The Chiefs are pretty encouraged by what they have there.
Adam Teicher of ESPN and ESPN.com joined us on During the Show today right here on ESPN Kansas City, 94.5 FM, 1510 AM, 1510.com. Adam, the Chiefs made a lot of offseason changes, obviously, as we've seen with the offensive line and some of the players that they were able to draft who, I think a lot of fans are hoping to see some immediate return on that investment, in the likes of a Creed Humphreys and maybe Cornell Powell. I'm curious in knowing, if you're looking at it from 30,000 feet, where do you see the most pressure lying with this Chiefs team? Do you think it's Patrick Mahomes that now that he's got an offensive line, talking about, being more efficient in his passing to where he can hopefully elevate Mecole Hardman, some of these players? Or do you think like a Mecole Hardman in the absence of a Sammy Watkins, pressure falls on him? So where do you think pressure falls at? As it relates to this year's upcoming team?
Well, I feel like there's room in that question you ask for a lot of things.
Yeah.
Let's start with the offensive line. Okay, the Chiefs have to get this right. I mean, this has to be the right moves. I mean, they sort of neglected their offensive line for years in the draft and mostly in free agency and even let a number of their better offensive linemen walk rather than re-sign them. And it kind of showed. Last year, they did a nice job of piecing everything together for most of the season, but the thing just collapsed in the Super Bowl. Okay, so they hats off to Brett Veach and his group. They went out and brought in 8 new guys, if you count the 3 free agents they signed, the 2 guys they drafted, the 1 they traded for, and then the 2 who opted back in after opting out last year. So now they need to figure out who plays where and what's the best 5 are. I mean, it's clear that Orlando Brown's going to start at left tackle and Joe Tooney at left guard, and I think it's 90-some percent that Creed Humphrey's going to start at center. It's important for the Chiefs to get those other 2 spots, whether it's to get them right, whether it's Trey Smith or Law DuVernay-Tardif at right guard or even Kyle Long, if he can get back in the mix. And it's important they get it right at right tackle, whether it's Lucas Niang or Mike Remmers. So, I feel like the pressure's on the Chiefs to get that right. And Mecole Hardman, it's his time now. This is what the Chiefs really drafted him for a couple of years ago. And, it's time now. When they needed a wide receiver to step up and take some playing time the last couple of years, it was when Sammy Watkins was out, they really never turned to him. I mean, it was mostly other guys, whether it was Byron Pringle or DeMarcus Robinson, and now it's going to be he's first in line. I think he needs to step up and prove he can be the guy consistently the Chiefs wanted him to be when they drafted him. So, I feel like there's a couple guys right off the bat. I mean, Frank Clark, a lot of pressure on him to be the player the Chiefs hoped when they traded for him a couple years ago and gave him a big contract. Chris Jones playing a new spot. I think there's pressure on him to get it right. So, a lot of stuff here, and there's a lot of room. A lot of guys are going to be under the spotlight when the season starts.
Let me preface this by saying I went to Mizzou, huge Mizzou guy, so obviously I was very excited by the Nick Bolton draft pick. Do you think Nick Bolton sees a lot of the field this year, or is it going to be a Willie Gay situation where we're yelling, saying it only makes sense to play him, but for some reason he's not getting on the field? Where do you think this is going to lie?
Well, I if you're asking me now, it's really early. They haven't put on the pads. They really haven't even started camp yet. But I'll say this. I if I had to say about Nick Bolton, I think it's going to be more along the lines of what we were saying about Willie Gay last year. Maybe he has a game or two where he's featured and plays a lot, and then there might be a game or two where he disappears. There's a number of signs that point to this. I mean, Steve Spagnuolo is he's kind of tough on rookies. I mean, he makes rookies prove it over and over and over and over again. You remember 2 years ago when Juan Thornhill was a rookie. I mean, Thornhill looked good in camp and had a nice preseason, and the Chiefs just would not put him into the starting lineup until right before the season started because Spagnuolo was waiting for Thornhill to prove it to him. So he's notoriously difficult. And then I'll go back to something Steve Spagnuolo said toward the end of OTAs a couple months ago. You know, he was talking about Bolton, and somebody asked him about him, and he said something like, "Well, yeah, you know, we're going to try to get him involved as quickly as we can, but I'm not sure that that's going to be early in the season." So, hey, you know, things can change. You know, Bolton can have a great camp and sort of force the Chiefs' hand, but I just feel like it's probably not wise with some of the things we know to expect him to be a big part of things, at least early in the season.
Adam, you know I respect your judgment. I know we are both harsh when it comes to, you know, in the past when it comes to the Chiefs and our season predictions on how they might do. In that case, where do you see at currently where the Chiefs could continue to improve before either the end of training camp or before the season begins?
Well, I mean, there's some room for growth. Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. I'm wondering what the Chiefs are going to get out of Clyde Edwards-Helaire this year. I mean, I think that's a good place for them to grow their offense.
Yeah.
I was kind of not disappointed. I don't think that's the right term. I just was a little bit underwhelmed by what the Chiefs got from him last year. You know, I was one of the ones who got to watch training camp last year, and he was having an impact pretty much every day as a receiver. And I'm thinking, wow, he's gonna really add to the Chiefs' passing game. And it's not like he was bad, I mean, as a receiver. I mean, he caught, 35, 36 balls, something like that, and which is not bad for a guy who missed 3 or 4 games with an injury. But there wasn't the impact, you know, you thought. And now I'm expecting more out of him. And you know, everybody talks about these offensive line changes the Chiefs made and how it's going to benefit Patrick Mahomes, and there's no doubt that that's job one, right? But I feel like, and the Chiefs more importantly feel like, that's going to help their running game as well. So you know, we know the Chiefs weren't very good running the ball goal line at short yardage. You know, they were so they had such a lack of confidence in their goal line and short yardage offense last year that you remember down near the goal line, they kept resorting to some of those trick plays.
Oh, yeah,
because they just could not punch it in and with a more conventional style. So I'm looking for that part to improve. That's on offense. On defense, maybe it's on, not. This is unrealistic, but I'm kind of looking for them to maybe get back to more what they were the last half of 2019. I mean, last year they were never really consistent rushing the quarterback. We know how bad they were in the red zone. I just felt like last year defense was sort of just along for the ride, and they were such a big part of the Chiefs winning the last 6 regular season games in 2019, and then in the playoffs as well in 2019. But last year, they never really consistently showed up for the Chiefs. So I'm looking for some improvement on certain things on that side of the ball as well.
Yeah, no, I'm with you because it was interesting because 2 years ago, like you said, when they went on that 9-game winning streak to win the Super Bowl, Steve talked about, you know, the pressure that, you know, that the players, obviously Frank Clark and Chris Jones getting those sacks. Then last year, well, our defense isn't meant to, you know, isn't designed to get sacks. I'm like, well, wait a second, man. Just 2 years ago when y'all won the Super Bowl, y'all were getting sacks and knocking the quarterback around. And this year, you know, I mean, this time around, y'all can't get pressure, and you're trying to say that that's not – I'm like, you got the same players. So I'm like, what's going on with this scenario? So, yeah, I really hope that the defense picks itself up. So
staying with that, with the D-line as a whole, especially with the end position, obviously they brought back Alex Okafor, that one-year deal. Where is your – comfort level here? I know everyone, most people, want a Justin Houston reunion. You know, where is your comfortability at with this defensive line?
Well, you know, I think the pieces are there for the Chiefs. They just have to, get them to play like it. I mean, you know, Frank Clark can be like the playoff Frank Clark has been the last couple of years, for instance, or like he was over the last half of the 2019 season. I think the Chiefs are fine there, particularly, we all expect Chris Jones to play more on the outside. I think the pieces are there for the Chiefs to be just fine. Now, if there's significant concern that Frank Clark won't be around for a whole season, or he won't improve over what he's given to the Chiefs for most of his time with the Chiefs, or that Chris Jones can't make it, won't be as productive outside, then you start to think, well, yeah, they do need some help. But, to me, it's a little bit telling that the Chiefs just didn't seem motivated with Melvin Ingram. He 1 year, $4 million. That's not a lot of money. I mean, if the Chiefs were really that interested in Melvin Ingram, they certainly would have topped that offer. So, I just feel like the Chiefs feel like they're in a pretty good place. Not that that can't change, but I don't know that it's completely necessary for sure.
One last question before we get you out. I mean, you can say yes or no, however you want to go for it, but did the Chiefs get a contract extension done with Tyrann Mathis before training camp is over with, or do you think they wait till after the season?
Yeah, those things are so hard to predict. They don't seem to be looking at training camp as any kind of deadline with him. That they may be looking more at March as the deadline, because obviously that's when he would become a free agent. But I know this. I know the Chiefs are they know exactly how important he is, not just on the field, but how important he is in the locker room. So I think they feel pretty good that eventually something will get done.
I'll be honest, Adam. I mean, my feeling on that is I think they play it out just like they did Chris Jones. They made Chris Jones play his rookie contract out and then sign him, you know, when he was a free agent. So I can see the same thing happening to them. Because at the end of the day, I'm old school. You sign a contract, you got to play underneath it, we'll see. Let the chips fall where they may. Adam Teicher joining us on Darren and Sterling. Adam, really appreciate your time. I'll see you on Wednesday, and I'll see you in the Zoom in just a few minutes. So,
all right. Anytime, guys.
I appreciate it. We'll be right back after this timeout. You're listening to Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back to Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. Thank you again to Adam Teicher of ESPN coming on, giving us the training camp updates. I think, to me, my favorite thing was DeAndre Baker. I don't think he's going to be a superstar either. I don't think that it's fair to put on him. He was a first-round draft pick. He has to be a lockdown number one. But if he can be a useful rotational piece alongside Legarius, Chavarius, and even the occasional Rashad Finn, I think that this secondary might surprise a lot of people.
Well, first of all, the media finally got a chance to talk to DeAndre Baker after a year being on the team. So that was a good deal for them. We got a chance to speak to him. I think it was Saturday. Was it Saturday? Yes, it was either Saturday or Sunday. I can't remember. I think I might have been on the air. So I can't remember when it was that they talked to him. But, look, I mean, all things being equal, that's he's a former first-round draft pick after he had the legal issues last year and the injury. I think if he comes back and is able to play anywhere near the expectation was on when he was drafted, I think the Chiefs would have a steal in that regards.
Oh, I just think if you get anything, because you got him for nothing. It's not like you're paying this guy $10 million a year. I mean, he's on a very team-friendly contract. I just think if he can make an average contribution at cornerback, the Chiefs will be okay. They obviously feel comfortable enough with him that they didn't bring back Bashaud Breeland. Now, my personal opinion of that is I think they should have brought back Bashaud. I think he was good enough at the contract he signed to bring him back. But this obviously points to the Chiefs saying, you know what, we are confident in DeAndre Baker, and we want to see what he can do. We think he's healed, and we don't think he's a injury-prone type of guy.
I think with Bashaud Breeland, I just think it became an issue where they may have felt in the future he may have been more worth. I think he may have been more trouble than what he may have been worth. I mean, I know, of course, he has his rap career that he likes to do when he's not doing football. It's kind of questionable, some of his judgment's kind of questionable, so it is what it is. But when we get out of here, Sterling, the Olympics, it kicked off Friday with the opening ceremonies. Team USA suffered the first loss in, 25 games at the Olympics in, 2004 with a 83-76 loss yesterday to France. Rudy Gobert and Fournier, who had 28 points against him. What's going on? I mean, I think it's more, and who should be held accountable for it?
I think Coach Pop.
Oh,
I think the players. At some point, because even the other teams, like on France, Evan Fournier goes, they're better players. We were a better team. Team USA has way better players. I hate the excuse of saying, well, Draymond Green is on this team. It's obviously not the best players that Team USA has.
JaVale McGee on this, so that's but, a little bit of.
My point is, you have Kevin Durant. You have Damian Lillard. You have Jason Tatum. You have...
I will say this.
What did Luka Doncic do? Put up 48.
You have technically one superstar on that team, and you have Dame Lillard, who is a star, but not a superstar. Kevin Durant is a superstar.
And Jason Tatum is a star.
Who
are you telling me on France? Where's Evan Fournier?
No. Hold on. I agree with the whole team
average
concept.
Starter. Where's Rudy Gobert? Don't make excuses for Team USA losing.
I'm not making excuses. Hold on. What are you talking? I'm not making excuses.
But my point is, all these people making excuses saying Team USA is not the best team they could have assembled.
Well, I agree with that.
But guess what? Only two teams have been. Only two teams have been the best possible players assembled. What? The Dream Team and then the Redeem Team. Okay?
I think 1992 was pretty good. Not 96.
My point is, not every team. You're not going to have the best players. Steph, LeBron,
well,
Kevin Durant.
That's the idea. I mean, you're
supposed to be sending matter.
The idea
have
is you
pride.
Are sending your best players out there.
My point is, have pride. The fact that Kevin Durant is shooting like a bum out there, the fact that Drew Holiday came from winning a championship and is picking up guys 94 feet, and guess what? The rest of your team, but to that extent, Pop isn't playing Chris Middleton in the stretch.
To that extent, I believe it's an issue where the players are feeling like they're playing more San Antonio offense than international offense, and I think that's the issue that they're coming across right now.
And Popovich isn't playing Chris Middleton in the stretch when he's your best clutch performer.
They literally did just get to the deal right before the game. Now,
and he just won a championship.
I know.
Being
I'm saying
clutch.
Drew Holiday played, and he played. Why he didn't play in the second half, I don't know. That's a coaching issue. That's why I said a lot of that falls on Greg Popovich, because you've been doing this for far too long. And the fact that you got 5 losses on your resume right now since you've been the coach and you haven't really, sound the alarm, that's a problem.
Yeah, the whole thing to me is I'm not making any excuses for Team USA. They need to either have some pride, get some guys who do have pride, get some guys who want to win. Like, this is not a scrimmage anymore.
We've had this conversation after the first loss, but do they win? Do they win the Olympic gold?
No.
Who beats them?
Oh, I name a team.
I don't know. That's why I'm asking you.
I could see Spain beating them. I could obviously France is beating them. I could see that happening again. I'm just being upfront. I could see multiple teams beating them.
Of the biggest problems that they have is they don't have size on the inside. I mean, you've had, especially when you got going up against Rudy Gobert.
Sure.
And your biggest player is Bam Adebayo. That's a problem.
But Rudy Gobert is just a defensive guy.
Hold on.
He can't score.
But he can get 26 rebounds. I mean, he can
sure,
keep you off the
glass.
Sure,
if you're missing shots, hit your shots.
They missed 5 in the last minute
yesterday.
Yeah,
5 in the last minute. They had 3 in the last possession. That's my whole point, though. And they got the offensive rebound.
They had an 8-point lead at the half and lost by 7.
Yeah. Bad coaching, bad playing. Dude, I get so pissed off talking to Team USA. I can't do it. But thank you to Adam Teicher coming on from ESPN, dropping some knowledge in Darren's words. A lot of fun. Darren's going to hop on a Zoom call with the Chiefs, so we'll have some more Chiefs talk for you tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
This is Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City. Tune in tomorrow from 3 to 4 p.m. We are out.